Welcome to the Pac-Man Podcast, Patriotic American Citizen. I'm Ted Plint on the BMG Network. Having a little audio difficulty, so we'll keep this short. I got to figure out where the problem is. I apologize if there's any difficulty listening to the program. Let's begin, but the obvious is these pro-Hamas, anti-Israel uprisings, which have apparently been simultaneously ignited on college campuses across the country. Now, these are well planned by a leftist cabal consisting of, in part, these campus communists and other organizers, and they're stirring up these kids in hopes of, I don't know what they're thinking, replicating the turmoil that America suffered in 1968. I was alive in 1968. I remember the anti-Vietnam protests, the political assassinations, the race wars, the riots in, you know, in Chicago and Watts and cities across the country. And that's, it appears that's where we're headed. Same types of people are stirring up trouble now who were stirring up trouble back in the 60s. Obviously a different bunch because the others have aged out. Now they're, you know, tenured professors at major universities, some of these leftists back in the 60s. They don't even know where Palestine is, most of these people. They couldn't find Palestine on a map. They couldn't find their hometown on a map, for God's sakes. I had a conversation on a shuttle bus recently, two interns, two young people. One guy's about 40, though. He's older than the average intern, and he works for a Democratic assemblyman. Nice kid, nice enough guy. So he and this young girl, she may have been 20, 22, they were discussing the disturbances at Columbia University, which is where a lot of this nonsense started, at Columbia, as it did back in the 60s. And it's spilling out onto numerous college campuses and university campuses across the country, as we mentioned. So the young lady was saying, well, you know, these kids have a right to protest. Now, she sounded as though she was sympathetic to the plight of these college kids protesting on college campuses. All right, that's all well and good. And her ethnic makeup, I don't know, not that that's important, but she could be, she's biracial. I'm not saying she's black and white. She could be Middle Eastern. She's dark-skinned. And well-spoken. She, you know, she's a college student and she's working for probably a Democrat. And the young guy responded by saying, well, you know, this is going to result in authoritarianism and totalitarianism. And he sounded like he wants to be a Republican, this kid. But he works for a moderate Democrat. I say kid, he's about 40. So police have shut down the protests at Columbia. And then the young lady brings up Kent State. She goes, look up Kent State. Look up Kent State. The disturbance is there. Now, four young kids were killed in Kent State on the campus in 1970. And if you look up Kent State, I haven't done it, but I'm sure Wikipedia has some kind of leftist slant to it. The reason those kids were killed is because they were throwing rocks and bottles at these National Guardsmen. And these people were not professional soldiers. They were weekend warriors. And this is not a slight against National Guardsmen, but I mean, they were not trained to deal with such a response from these kids who were throwing rocks and bottles. They were torched up by these leftists on campus back in 1970. Four young kids were killed in this protest. And there was some good music that came out of that riot by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. It was called Ohio, Tin Soldiers and Nixon Coming. But, I mean, it was unfortunate. But these kids should not have been reacting the way they did. But, they were torched up. They were ginned up by these leftists on campus. Some of these people live for this. Some of these leftists. That's what their job is, to stir up trouble. And, you know, where better a place to stir up trouble than at a college campus? These kids they're idealistic. They don't know any better. They haven't lived long enough. But the left is trying to justify this Jew hatred, which is really all it is. They're claiming it's anti-Zionist, not anti-Israel. It's nonsense. It's just plain anti-Semitism. And it's just more evidence that most of the anti-Semitism is from the left. They'll say, what about Hitler? What about Hitler? He's a Nazi. The Nazis, folks, were socialists. Hitler was a socialist. They were leftists. They weren't rightists. Anyway, these disturbances happening all over Emerson College, Penn University, and simultaneously. So when you see that happening, you know it's orchestrated. And, you know, we're still living under communism in large part. And I'm in the middle of reading a good book by a former FBI agent. His name is Clausen. I can't think of his first name, but I'm about a third of the way through it. Got it right here. The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen. It was written back in, I think, in the 60s. Excellent read. Okay, on to another. Speaking of communism, the Biden administration is suing Sheetz, S-H-E-E-T-Z, on the same day as he makes a campaign stop. This is how stupid not only Biden is, but his campaign. They file a lawsuit, an EEOC lawsuit, says a convenience store company's use of criminal background checks discriminates against minority job applicants. Now, what are they saying? They're admitting that people of color, young men of color, commit a disproportionately high percentage of the crimes. But anyway, the timing of this couldn't be worse for Biden. He makes this impromptu campaign stop at a Pittsburgh area Sheetz. Now, I'm not familiar with this company, but I guess it's big in Pittsburgh. So the U.S. Equal Opportunity Employment Commission files a lawsuit against a convenience store company for alleged racial discrimination. The suit was filed back in April, on April 17th, filed in a U.S. District Court for the District of Maryland, and it charges that the Pennsylvania-based Sheetz Inc. and the way it uses criminal background checks to screen job applicants is racially discriminatory. The EEOC does not claim that the alleged discrimination is deliberate, but the process itself, according to the agency, causes significant disparate impact to Black, Native American, and multiracial applicants. For example, the complaint notes that 14.5% of Black applicants were denied employment at Sheetz due to a failed background check. Well, they wouldn't have been turned away if they didn't fail the background check. If they were white and they failed the background check, they wouldn't have got a job. Similar results found, and I'll just read this out here. This is, I forget where I got this. I think Newsmax. Similar results found in the cases of Native American and multiracial job seekers, while less than 8% of white applicants were denied jobs for the same reason. So evidently these whites were found suspect as well. But the EEOC acknowledges in its lawsuit that the employment outcomes were consistent with criminal justice statistics. Got to play the percentages, which show that Black, Native American, and multiracial applicants commit a higher percentage of crimes than do whites. You want equity? You need to be consistent in how you apply its precepts. That's all. That's all there is to it. This story I've been sitting on for 3 weeks. I don't know, at least 3 weeks. This young guy, high school student in Indiana, went viral after refusing to comply with a request from his school to remove the American flag from his truck. The school district had to back down and reverse its decision. Now, we know that most school boards are populated by liberals, and this kid wasn't having any of it. Cameron Blazek, senior at East Central High School in St. Leon, Indiana, said his guidance counselor and a vice principal told him to remove the flag from his truck. It's his truck, his property. The American flag. He wasn't flying a Soviet flag or, you know, an LGBTQ flag. That would have been okay, probably. So Blazek claims he was pulled aside and told to remove the flag as it was violating school rules, whatever they are. He claims the school officials said if he had the American flag on his truck, other students may put flags that are seen as offensive on their vehicles. We couldn't have that. What's wrong with individualism? Isn't that what this country's about? Rugged individualism? Blazek said, no, I'm not going to do that. Not going to happen, he said. He read through the school's handbook and discovered there are no rules against displaying the American flag in the parking lot. So in an interview with local media, Blazek talked about how the flag represents this beautiful country, as well as representing those who have died trying to defend it. He emphasized that while it may be hard to talk about, it's important to remember the meaning of the flag and the sacrifices people have made for it. This kid, he's got his head on straight. School officials didn't like it. After Blazek declined to remove the flag, posts about his experience went viral online, some reaching 6 million views within days. You're probably aware of this. Other students at the school showed their support for Blazek by putting an American flag on their vehicles, which Blazek said he was shocked by. The school quickly went into damage control. They walked it back, attempted to deflate the controversy by sending out a letter to parents saying the school is allowing students to display the American flag in the parking lot as long as it complies with the U.S. flag code. They're not allowing anything. You have a right to fly the American flag in your vehicle, on your vehicle, whatever. No school can tell you you cannot fly it. Couple of things here. We know how bad the economy is. I just looked at a piece here from the New York Post. This is over a month old. Some of these prices have gone even higher, so we'll scrap that. I want to mention I'm a lifelong Yankee fan, been a Yankee fan since as long as I can remember, mid-1960s. And one of the great radio broadcasters of all time called it a career. I love this guy's voice. 85 years old, John Sterling. He sounds like he's 40. I mean, he hasn't missed a beat. I mean, he sometimes blows a call and says, you know, he'll call a home run when it's a deep fly ball on the warning track. But, I mean, you know, he's 85 years old, and he loves the Yankees. And I think he saw a lot of those games with his heart instead of his eyes. But he called it a career, and, you know, just immediately he said, that's it. This is my last home stand, and I'm retiring after this week. And you know, iconic voice. And he's colorful. He's got his own way of calling home runs. I could go into you know, examples here, but 36 years as a Yankee broadcaster, more than 5,500 games he's called John Sterling. I mean, he's the voice of the Yankees. I loved listening to him in the summer. I'd go out on my deck and just turn on the radio and listen to John Sterling and Susan Waldman, I guess it is. And she's getting up there as well. She's got to be in her mid-70s. And, you know, they're affectionately referred to as Ma and Pa Yankee. Now, I don't know what Sue Waldman's going to do, but I mean, she was difficult to listen to. Just a kind of not really a good radio voice, but she had an appeal and she prepared well. And speaking of preparing, I mean, John Sterling always came prepared to every single broadcast, and the two of them together were great. And it was fun to listen to. I'm sorry to see him go, but I mean, you know, and I hope it's nothing health related because he's an Iron Man. John Sterling. All right, that's about going to wrap things up. If you liked what you heard, please hit that like button, hit subscribe, and share with your friends on social media. And check out the BMG website. We have some great broadcasters. We have this program, which airs weekly, The Pac-Man with me, Ted Flint. My daughter Madeline does a show called The Essentials with Maddie Flint that airs every once in a while. She's working on a show now. Should be up in a day or two. Adrian Ross does a show, The Age Sage with Mr. Costa. And some really fine programming. Check out the columns we do for you, too, under the PAC perspective. Thanks for tuning us in. If you want to contact me directly, it's Pacman, PACMAN, at thebmgnetwork.com. And again, thanks for tuning us in. And if the Lord wills it, we will talk to you soon.
The Pac-Man Podcast was produced and edited in the BMG studio. Music by Kevin MacLeod. For more episodes of the Pac-Man Podcast, go to thebmgnetwork.com or go to the BMG Network on Facebook. And be sure to tune in to the next episode of the Pac-Man Podcast with Ted Flint.